This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Appreciate you staying with us and rolling into the Hour 2 segment of the show. It is The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. On a Monday in the big city.
I looked over that clock and was like, what the hell? They haven't changed the clock in here yet. It says 102.
Oh, it does?
Like, what the hell's going on? What happened?
I probably would have never known if it wasn't for my iPhone.
Charlie had a hell of a day. He pointed it out for us when we walked in the studio today.
The time is 11. What the? I don't know what to do right now.
Walked in and told Palillo, I said, hey, top of the afternoon to you.
Not really.
But someone could fix that clock. Okay, got it. So just to wrap up, when we were talking about Rockets, bizarre situation in Brooklyn. Kenny Atkinson.
I saw that.
Just a highly regarded guy, coach. Started out here under Jeff Van Gundy as the player development guy. Great dude, too. I used to hoop with him all the time. Just a down-to-earth guy. Then he kind of got his feet wet in the NBA, went a couple different places.
Was with D'Antoni and the Knicks.
Uh-huh. He was with the Knicks and got the head coaching job with the Nets and widely regarded as the guy that got them on the right path, got them to the playoffs a couple times, really has done some great things even when they had injuries in really grooming and shaping young players. Now, all of a sudden, they're the seventh seed in the East, and the headlines come out this weekend. Nets and Atkinson mutually agree to part ways. And they're blaming the players. They're saying, you know, KD and Kyrie might have had something to do with this, mm-hmm. and they're not even playing. But Kyrie's done for the year. KD obviously wasn't going to play all year. And then on top of it, DeAndre Jordan goes in there last night after the game in some Dudley Do-Right hat and basically tells the reporter he's full of BS for even asking the question. And he goes, if you're going to blame those two guys, then you blame me and you blame Garrett Temple and the eight new guys that are in this locker room. But basically, that's a bunch of BS. Is it?
I saw a headline that says Kyrie.
Oh no! I thought you were talking about DeAndre. My bad.
No, that Kyrie's involved with more drama on another team, and that seems to follow him everywhere he goes. That wasn't the headline, but that was what they were implying. And I saw something that said KD might have also had a hand in it and been behind it. So you don't know for sure, but it's a weird, like you said, he was highly regarded. Although looking at his record, I'm not sure why.
Sean Marks, the general manager, said, you know, because he was asked like a whole bunch of times at that press conference when they announced it, if KD or Kyrie had anything to do with it. He kept on answering the question the same and said, nope, it was a decision that, you know, I made, ownership made, and Atkinson made. I don't feel like Kenny made it. I feel like it wasn't mutual, but that's what he kept saying. Well, he would not blame KD or Kyrie.
Well, let me ask you this, Joel, cause to that point. Would it make sense to resign, or was there a buyout? Because you're going to have to fire me because I'm going to get my money.
When they say it's mutually agreed upon, they're paying you to go away. You best believe that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're paying him to go away. And because his track record was so good in terms of just from the pulse of the situation from NBA types, he's so highly regarded. He's going to get another job. He's probably going to get it quickly. That's why I said, you want to talk about a young name that I know Daryl is just enamored with as one of those guys like Eric Spoelstra. It's Kenny Atkinson. And Kenny Atkinson would be a guy, and you know that Van Gundy would swear up and down for him too because he's worked with him, that there would be a young guy that understands analytics and likes it as well as understands. I think there's a guy that you could see being brought in next year to coach this Rockets
How
team.
Awkward would that be that he takes over for a guy he used to work for in D'Antoni? That'd be a little awkward. But that's coaching.
But I think D'Antoni would understand that. It's like, hey, look, you didn't step on my toes. Yeah. They went and got you.
Yeah.
So I totally get it.
His coaching record, though. First year in Brooklyn, 20-62.
Had a horse crap team.
Second year in Brooklyn, 28-54. So he really only made the playoffs once. Mm-hmm. 42-40, third year in Brooklyn, they make the playoffs. And then this year, they were 28-34 with Kyrie Irving.
The first two years, you're trying to escape the Kevin Garnett deal, the Paul Pierce deal. You were cap-strung. You didn't have a lot of talent. They basically said, you know, for everything that you're seeing now out of Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, and there's a guy that had a major injury in college. No one gave him a chance to like really shine, and he's just on fire. Some of the guys, that Caris LeVert, another guy that had a major injury and was just kind of overlooked in college, and now he's a stud. And they give him a ton of credit, but things change in the locker room and just overall from a franchise's dynamics when you bring in not just max players, but they have max attitude, max ego, and a lot of times fans don't get to see who they really are as people. And when you bring them in, it becomes the locker room, which was harmonious when all these young players were coming together for the benefit and good of the team, and they were making the playoffs, and they were fun to watch because they busted their tails on both ends. Now suddenly it's Kyrie going, bro, I don't do that.
Somebody I looked at to compare him to a little bit was Brad Stevens.
True.
Brad Stevens took over the Celtics, hot commodity out of Butler. First year, 25-57. So you're like, oh, okay, that's similar to Kenny. Next year, 40-42, made the playoffs. Hasn't missed the playoffs since his second year with the Celtics. And that was taken over for a bad Celtics team. Okay. So, you know, he's had one out of the 4 years, he barely surpassed 500. So what, and I'm just asking, I'm not pointing out any flaws, but I'm asking, what makes him such a hot commodity based on his four years?
That's what I'm starting to get into with you. To tell you, he's an analytics guy. He's not okay. He's not anti-analytics, which you have to have when you're dealing with a Daryl, right, and his sure. staff. You've got to understand and accept the numbers and implement them into your system. He's young. He relates to the players, they thought, because of the fact that he can shape young talent as a younger coach as opposed to an old crotchety guy that was going to teach you the old school way and creates a disconnect. Mm-hmm. But the dynamics change when instead of that young, hungry, thirsty for any kind of knowledge kind of team, you take on a team that suddenly takes on two max players that have been there, done that, and won titles. And now suddenly, and then you take on a DeAndre Jordan, who's just an older veteran player, too, that is set in his ways. I'm sure that kind of, any of the long practices and some of the things that he was instituting that were working with his team before he got these three veteran type guys. I'm sure that it changed a little bit when, like I said, remember they had problems almost the whole year, and then Kyrie was, you know, speaking up and not doing this, and then,
oh, yeah.
you know, flirting with, hey, you know, he points out only like three or four handful of guys on the roster and goes, these are the guys that we'll have next year. It's like, what are you trying to do, bro? You're blowing up the whole team before the season's even half over.
Yeah, Kyrie, the drama seems to follow him.
Correct.
So I'm not going to hold that against him. But no Kevin Durant, you feel like, you know.
And the rosters early on that he inherited, they hired him because they knew it was going to be a project. They knew that they were cap-strapped with bad trades and contracts. They knew that their draft pick situation wasn't great. They were trying to get better. So you take all that into an effect and say, look, he's probably coming on the cheap too, his first head coaching gig.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to, like, bash the dude because I would love nothing more than for the Rockets to get an Eric Spoelstra or a Brad Stevens type. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But I just see a little bit of the results. But what you say makes a ton of sense, and it's a rational thought process. But it kind of doesn't – this year maybe, I guess, was the outlier then because you did have two bad years. You finally – 14-point swing going from year two to year three. So that's a really good – 14-game win swing. So, but that would be great.
Year, Barry, and give him credit too to say.
But how would he handle this locker room?
You thought you were going to have Kyrie all year. You didn't. You still had your team in the playoffs.
Well, in the East,
it is. But the how East, do you, but still?
But how do you think he would deal with James and Russ and the dynamics of this locker room?
You worked with him,
being
Michael.
A younger coach.
I've worked with him. Yes, I played hoops with him.
Because you know,
I think he's a really, really good dude. But he really knows the game. He played the game in college. He's sharp. He's learned and absorbed from the guys that he's mentored under. I think that you're bringing up a very good question that the Rockets would have to really dig into. Is he's perfect for a young team with a bunch of hungry kids, right? That you need to shape and mold. I can't speak for how he would be with superstars.
What you saw? Well, he was director of player development, right? Mm-hmm. So how was he? How did players react to him then?
They liked him. He worked his tail off. He was always there to work them out and work them through drills and give them things, pointers and things that would help to make them better. They utilized video as much as they did on the court, but on the court, he busted his tail. And I think players appreciated that. But I think that's what I'm saying. Work ethic's there. Really, really good. With, like, almost Barry, to give you a different way of putting it, he'd probably be a great college coach because it's all young kids that have to listen to him. But in the NBA, I can't tell you if he would be okay, better, because obviously
would they respect him as
and would they listen to him? Yeah, because the big thing is ideally, if you're Kenny Atkinson, you go, I'm just hanging on this year, because if I get to the point where I get Kyrie and KD, we're set. And he couldn't get there.
I feel like guys like James almost need you can't have a coach that hasn't done it like a Mike D'Antoni. But although I think James loves him because he makes him look good, from a respect perspective, though, like, you know, like,
well, James, even if you brought in like McHale,
or a Pat Riley or somebody that's, I think he would look at those guys and be like, nope, it's too old school. It's almost like you got to bring in a young guy that's winning. You're not going to get those guys. You've either got to get an inexperienced guy that's already, you got to bring in a Brad Stevens
or Eric Spoelstra or guys nowhere. Like that.
Those teams ain't crazy.
Because you're right. It's a very fine line, because you got to get someone he respects but doesn't tune out because they're too old school. Because that's what he did with McHale.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't care about, you know, most guys that came into the league for years would say, look, I don't care about anything else. If this dude's in the Hall of Fame as a player and he's got titles and all these individual accomplishments, I got to listen to him.
Yep.
But it's a new ball game now. And James is one of those guys that's like, if you don't impress me, I don't care what you've done. I'm not listening to you.
Even if you're old school with titles, you still got to respect it. And there's a certain level where you think he's out of touch. He doesn't know the current game anymore. So there's a weird dynamic for the
difference is Russ has done it. Russ has taken a guy like Billy Donovan raw out of college that he could have just turned his back on and shut out. He listened to him enough that they had a good relationship. So he's at least been able to work with somebody. James hasn't. So unless James handpicks the next coach, I don't know what the Rockets are going to do if they indeed say that he's still our guy.
Yeah. What if you traded? This is going to sound so stupid. I'm just totally making stuff up. Well, the Rockets, hot take. Rockets trade Mike D'Antoni. Anytime a trade proposal starts with a coach, you know it's going to be garbage. This isn't a lie. I'm like a bum right now. No, I'm not making this up. What if they trade Mike D'Antoni and James Harden to Brooklyn for Kevin Durant and then hire Atkinson?
Well, I don't think KD wants Atkinson, but yeah, I think Rockets fans would be all over that at this point.
You get KD back with Russ. That would be awesome.
Now there is a rumor. Just kidding.
That's so silly.
There are rumors out there that as much as D'Antoni said this is his last stop, that he's going to be a hot commodity. Teams just for the very offense innovative. Alone. Yeah, but the fact that he can do that. So we'll see how that all shapes up. But at least there's a name on the market now. If you're a Rockets fan thinking about next year, at least to consider in Kenny Atkinson. We're going to continue to roll on in hour number two of the 3-hour show. So if you want to join us, the HRNP listener line is 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number, or hit us up on Twitter right here on ESPN 97.5.
Looking for something to do this weekend? Visit culturemap.com to find out everything going on in the city. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, rolling through the second hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. And we were just discussing what we had to discuss with the Rockets. And I know it doesn't make your day. But this isn't going to make you feel any better, because now we transition from Rockets to Astros. And after we had been talking about some of the positives that had happened going into the weekend with Justin Verlander and Kyle Tucker getting some big hits and Zach Greinke's second straight good outing and then Josh James and some of the young pitchers pitching well, then there's this. Verlander made his second start over the weekend. He was scheduled to pitch 4 innings. He was pulled after 2. He said he had some discomfort in his tricep, and now it's come out that he has been shut down after an MRI reveals a mild lat strain, and he's unlikely to be ready for opening day. Not good.
No. Hopefully it's not a big deal, something minor. But that's the concern when you have a 37, 38-year-old pitcher. Is that his body's going to start breaking down on him a little bit, and this could be the year. It's going to happen at some point.
And you know what? And the thing is that my first impression too was, well, here's the easy out so that you don't have to take as much of the heat for what the rest of the team's going to go through, which is going to be a pretty troublesome year dealing with all the cheating comments and road games and things like that. But I did like what he said because, you know, they basically said that, you know, he will miss the opener. He said, it'd probably take a miracle for me to be back before opening day, but I don't want to take miracles off the table. So I like the fact that
still hungry.
You know, he's hungry. He still wants to be out there. He wants the ball. Dusty Baker said in regards to his start before he got the word that the rest of the team just got that he was surprised his velocity was down because we had mentioned in his first start it was up. But he said, you know, Verlander can dial it up when he gets ready. We didn't see anything. I was quite surprised when Brent Strom came over and told me he had to come out of the game.
Yeah, it's a – I don't know. I would just tell you. As a fan, just be ready. Because when stuff like this, and this could be nothing. This could just be a blip on the radar. But just prepare yourself just in case. Because there's a moment, and it seems like in a pitcher's career, where when stuff starts to happen, it starts to happen a lot. They start to, it goes south. And at 37, and if he turns 38 this year, it's hard to recover.
He just turned 37, but still, that's still up
there. It's hard to recover from that. Well,
you're just the black cloud again today.
I'm just preparing you. I'm just telling you, be ready for it. I'm not saying it's going to happen because he's so resilient. And when you see how, you know, what an Iron Man he is on the mound, it would be almost the opposite of what you would expect. You feel like he's, you know, he pitches until he's 40 and then calls it quits, and he's very effective in doing so. But at the same time, the body can start to break down and you never get it back. So hopefully that's not the case. That's all I'm saying.
You hope not. And there, you know, the thing is that because of the fact that they selected a general manager so late in the offseason, and then he had to get settled in. Now the onus is on him because now he's got to either make a decision that, look, the young arms that we've been looking at with Urquidy and Valdez and guys like that are going to be guys that we're actually going to consider. What do we do short term? Do we have to consider, to your point, long term? He's also got a dilemma with what he's going to do with Josh Reddick. And it would be easier if Kyle Tucker was ripping the cover off the ball, and he's not.
Yeah.
So immediately, James Click's got a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah. The good news is it's a long season, and you can fade a month where you're trying to figure it all out. So, you know, if you get off to a slow start in April, of course, and I think it's highly likely that that happens just because of the amount of media scrutiny they're going to get and the fans and everything else. It's quite possible that this team is just bad in April and maybe through May or something. But then if they get healthy and Verlander comes back and they start getting some momentum and some confidence, you could see it. They get used to the jeers and the boos and the questions. And
you just hate to dig a hole that you have to try and come back from when you know the Angels are better. The A's are still there, young and really talented.
None of those teams, though, in that division scare me.
Wow. Okay.
None of those teams scare
me. Obviously, the Angels need pitching, but their offense is a hell of a lot better.
Sure.
And from an Oakland perspective, look, they were the last 2 years when no one gave them a shot, they were there.
There's way too much talent. The Astros are by far the most talented team, even without Justin Verlander.
I don't disagree. But you'd hate to have something like this set you back when you already know what you're up against in terms of all eyes upon you, and they're all hoping for negative things. And like you said, the road games are going to be just terrible to deal with early on. That you don't need anything like this to further hinder any, you know, run you're going to try and make to try and right the wrong and prove to people that you are a talented team.
Yeah, that's the concern. I was trying to see, where does Verlander rank amongst pitchers and innings pitched the last couple of years? Because that's
got to be up there.
That's what worries me, is that he's just been such an Iron Man.
Sure.
So he by far was the league leader in 2019. He pitched 223 innings. The second closest was Shane Bieber at 214. So 10 more innings than the second closest guy, right? That's a whole game. I mean, that's probably two games, really. 2018, Corey Kluber led the league with 215. Verlander was 214. So he was, and then third was 204. So right there. Again, amongst the league leaders in innings pitched. And then 2017, Chris Sale led the league in innings pitched. Verlander was third. So just the last 3 years, this guy has either been one, two, or three in innings pitched, and he's 37. That's why I'm a little bit concerned and kind of being the black cloud on the injury thing. Because I bet you I could keep going over the last decade, and he's always going, barring injury seasons, he's always going to be up there.
And that's the risk, like you said, too. But the other risk is, it was always looked at as a huge feather in his cap. He just had the elastic arm. Yep. He could keep going.
Yep.
You know, we always talked about how crazy it was that his velocity actually went up throughout a game into the late innings.
Yeah.
But you also make a great point that even the most elastic arms at a certain point reach the level where you're not doing it like you used to do. Your arm isn't as young as it used to be, and it bites you in the ass.
No.
So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it's not a major deal. Hopefully, you know, it's just a matter of getting, you know, his arm ready after he comes back from this. But they're shutting him down for the time being, and that's not a good look if you're the Houston Astros as they continue to prep for the opener, which is right around the corner. I think it's like the 26th of March here at home. It's crazy. Before you know it, we're going to be having baseball games. Nick's going to never see home again. He's going to be gone every night. All right, we're not going to be gone anywhere. We're going to still be here as we are now at the halfway point in the show. First half behind us, second half still to come. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Here comes the second half of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Monday in the big city.
We are aware that there is some technical glitches. We're getting them figured out. Hang tight.
Got someone at the tower.
You no longer need to text or tweet or whatever.
We know that it's both the signal and on the stream.
Joel farted and knocked the tower down. And now,
would you like me to do that for you, Barry?
No.
Well, then I think we'll just cut that conversation right
now. No,
there.
I'm good. Please don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what up, town. Yeah. Real quick, before we get into, I just got to say, I finally used the air fryer.
Good Lord, it's about time.
I mean,
all you did was brag all over it for days and you still hadn't taken it out of the damn box.
Yeah, I hadn't. I was waiting on Nora to get back.
Are you talking about the Instapot or just the air fryer?
Well, it's the both. It's an Instapot.
That so has an air pressure cooker because you got the fancy one.
It's the lid, which I didn't know, but you basically swap the lid out. So one lid is for the pressure cooker, and then the other lid is the air fryer. So you just go back and forth. So once I opened it, I realized all that. But I made wings.
And?
That was legit.
They were pretty good?
That was legit.
Crispy? Now,
the first batch, not so good. I didn't air fry them long enough, so they weren't crispy. Now, right. What I did is real simple. I just went to the store and bought Hooters wing sauce because I like Hooters wings. So I was like, well, this makes sense. I didn't make my own wing sauce. Everybody uses that Frank's Red Hot wing sauce. Eh. They have Hooters wing sauce. I bought the medium and the hot because I wanted to try both. Dude, I was like, I bought a bag of wings and it was the first round was, second round, once I crisped them longer and did all that, I get it. I totally get it.
Okay, so break it down for me now. The difference in terms of calories and fat content and all that, how much are you saving traditional way versus air fryer?
So it's one, it's healthier cholesterol wise because you're not deep frying it in oil. Mm-hmm. You spray a little bit of Pam. I just bought like a, Pam with butter, spray it on the wings, and then it just uses air and heat to crisp them up. So you don't have the breading, that's carbs and calories. You don't have the deep fried, that's the oil. And that's more calories and bad fat. So it's a lot healthier. And you basically, all you have to do is take the calories on the bag that says for the wings themselves. If you just, basically cooked wings with no seasoning or no sauce. Mm-hmm. And then the sauce itself. So I would say it was probably half the calories that you would normally get.
Interesting. Okay.
That would be a guess, but it would be about half of what you would normally expect to eat. So I'm like, that works for me.
Yeah, I need to get one. I really need to get one, but I bought one as a gift, so I'm just going to ask if I can borrow the gift.
Hey, can I use your air fryer? So you bought the air fryer or the instant, like the pressure
I think
cooker?
I think the one I got doesn't have
an air fryer,
but maybe all of them do. I don't know.
Yeah. So the I found a thing and they said that you pressure cook, because you can go straight from frozen to done. You don't have to. But this guy like used the pressure cooker for like 5 minutes, I guess, to just defrost and get the wings cooked, I guess, a little bit. I'm guessing you don't have to do that step. I did it anyways. They were legit though, man.
It's so funny how you're getting all excited about the air fryer.
Oh my God, they were juicy. I was just like, yo, it's on and popping now. Like, I can't wait to start cooking all kinds of crazy stuff.
I feel like I haven't heard any bad feedback on that thing.
Raheel loves his.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I get it, man. I totally get it. If you're thinking about it because you're a wing guy and you're just trying to go healthier, highly recommend.
Not good for steaks and stuff like that.
No, so the one I have will even do sous vide, but you could still cook. Like, they'll tell you directions for cooking steak and stuff. Since mine's both a pressure cooker and an air fryer, it also has a sous vide option. You just put water in there into the pressure cooker, and it keeps a constant temperature, so you can still make a steak sous vide style, which is really the best style, the best way to make a steak. So, I'm sold, man. It's what?
That's sous vide style. You ain't gonna convince me.
You have to have it. And one day I'm gonna have you and Lisa and Nick over for dinner. I'm gonna make sous vide steaks. You just have to try it.
Well, you know you'll have plenty of meat left over because Lisa ain't touching it. I know that.
But I'm
for
telling
sure.
you, man. You got. Then I'll just have you and Nick over. You guys have to. I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, she can still come. She's just not gonna eat the meat.
Once you have it, you will never want to eat a steak made another way again. I promise you that.
We'll see.
Okay.
You know I like the well done and the meat.
I know, and I'll even make it well done for you.
All right.
In the sous vide, it's just going to be better.
Okay, we'll see. All right, so we've got XFL football to talk about because your Roughnecks are 5-0. Before we get to that, kind of amusing. And again, we talk about just the access that you get on the XFL. I happened to be watching this game yesterday between Seattle and LA, and Josh Johnson, who's been, I think, 13 teams in the NFL, but he's the quarterback for LA. And evidently in his headset, Norm Chow, the offensive coordinator, was like all over the map, and they score, and they give the ball up on downs, and he comes over to the sideline, and he's like, they got him mic'd up. So before he even gets to where he wants to talk to Coach Chow, he's like, man, coach has got to quit all this. They got to quit all this talking, and everybody's looking at him, and he's acting all crazy. He goes to the sidelines, and you know, normally there's like an assistant coach that goes, hey, coach wants to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like he was ready to call his mama long distance. He went to the side, grabbed this phone that had a little digital, the real nice phone, picks it up. He starts dialing up to the press box. And he said he was going to give it to the coach. He didn't lie.
276 yards. This will be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it could be a good conversation. It looked like Josh made the call. It looked like he was making a phone call.
Coach, y'all doing way too much arguing and complaining. Call plays. Stop that. Stop it.
That's great.
And he literally went on after that, too.
Stop
no,
that.
Coach, seriously.
Stop it. He just, like, chastised them. That's
they
great.
They came back and won. They were getting their butts handed to them all first half. They scored. They couldn't even get an extra. They couldn't get the extra point completed. They were down, like, I want to say 14, 15, 16 points. They came back and won the damn game. Which was amazing.
Well, maybe his pep talk to the coach worked.
I guess.
I saw.
But that's the beauty of the XFL with all the access they give you.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I like that.
And the Roughnecks 5-0, but not without controversy.
Yeah.
Now, I turned it off when they had the lead, thinking that they were going to win the game. And then I read about the controversy after the game, and I was curious as to why P.J. Walker on fourth down, why they didn't just punt it away. But instead, they were just trying to run out the clock. And as it turned out, in their own territory, his knee hit the ground with like 2 seconds remaining on the clock. But the referees and everybody on the field just said, nah, game's over. Let it go. Well, after further review, the league had to come out and admit they blew it. They missed it because the league has the 3-point conversion. That they literally were still in a one-score game, and Seattle should have had the opportunity from the Houston 20-some yard line to score on the final play of the game, and if they had scored, then go for it with a chance to tie. Instead, the head of officials for that game was reassigned, the league announced, as part of the fact that they had to admit they were wrong.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
That's obviously it's a long shot that they would, you know, that Seattle would still find a way to win.
Sure.
But the bottom line is the Roughnecks are 5-0.
Hey, and you don't want, I mean, you feel bad, but I mean, if you were Seattle, you'd probably, if you were a Seattle fan, you're probably like upset. Stuff happens. Like you said, they're probably not winning that game. 5-0 is 5-0. Right. Suck it.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling sorry for anybody. In fact, XFL on Fox tweeted out, they said, Houston fans are 5 weeks through the XFL season and still don't know what a loss feels like.
And I've said over and over again.
And I quote tweeted that and said, yes, we do. We have the Texans.
Well, you don't. No, I was going to respond to yours.
We absolutely know what it's like to lose football games.
I was going to respond to your tweet and say, but your we doesn't include you because you're a Chiefs fan.
That's
pretty true.
Houston fans. I'm in Houston and I'm a fan. Yeah, yeah.
So. What does it mean when they reassigned? Because they said in the statement that
it means you're still getting paid, but you'll do whatever they tell you you're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think, and probably they'll let this all kind of blow over.
And then put him back in.
Yeah, and probably put him back there.
Sure.
And say, hey, lesson learned. It's kind of like a paid suspension. But they had to do something because it's a really bad look. But, you know, look, the way that the Houston team, the Roughnecks came back. You know, they didn't look great in the first half. They had some turnovers, which was very unlike what they've done to this point in the season. They found a way to win. Crowd was great. So, you know, to your point, Barry, which I keep saying.
Adversity?
Yeah. You know, and from what you're, to your point, what I keep saying is, look, if you're going to have a team in a startup league, who cares if it's not the NFL? Bottom line is, what's better than going undefeated and leading the league instead of, you know, wallowing in the mediocrity that Dallas and some of these teams that were favored to win it are doing? Hey, we didn't ask for the league to be a startup that was, you know, trying to figure out popularity and all these other things. All I know is that they're undefeated. It could be a lot worse.
Yeah, and you like to see, you know, the them overcoming adversity and them not getting down. And you're right. It's fun to watch if they're winning. If it's something new and a little gimmicky and you're watching and they suck, then you lose interest real fast. So at least they're holding everybody's interest here in town for the time being.
And you're talking about Houston, too. And you know that the city of Houston, as just overall fans, don't take too kindly to repetitive losing.
Oh, yeah.
Just think about, go back to the first hour and just talking about four losses in a row for the Rockets, but let alone... Yeah, if you ain't winning, then you ain't a thing.
Well, how many interceptions did P.J. Walker have? Three? At least three, right?
Well, didn't he have the one fumble, too, where he was hit?
Yeah, the turnover, You like to see it, man.
Yeah.
You like to see it, and you like to see him not being afraid to throw the ball around. Because you got to think when stuff like this happens, I know if it were me, the first thing you're thinking is, this could potentially be costly down the road because I'm trying to get to the NFL one day. And if I'm out here throwing three INTs in a game, that's not helping my cause. But it came back and won, and so that helps. You know, teams see that and think, well, the kid's a winner.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. So the Roughnecks keep on rolling as they – I think they're off this weekend. They're 5-0, and I think everybody but two teams play every week. And when I looked at the schedule on ESPN, because God knows you couldn't get a game recap or a box score – I think they're off this week. But look, they just keep rolling along, and that's a good thing if you're a Houston football fan. We're going to keep rolling along. Take a quick break. Come back with a whole lot more. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
G'day. Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, wrapping up hour number two of the three-hour show. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel on a Monday in H-Town. We appreciate you sticking with us. as we've had a couple of hiccups signal-wise, but we're still here, and so hopefully so are you. You guys, a lot of attention, both positive and negative, coming out off the UFC this weekend.
I'm so mad I didn't get to watch it.
The main event on the men's side
was boring.
Didn't do a whole lot
for
anything popularity-wise or image-wise for the sport. But man, oh man, that women's match was a bloodbath.
Joanna's head looked probably three times bigger after that fight was done. It was just so, I mean, there was some serious hematoma there.
It was
there.
Like alienation across her forehead, how thick it was.
Yeah, people were making the argument that was the best fight ever, not just in women's MMA, but
Did you watch it?
I watched the main event. I caught the tail end of the co-main. The main event sucked. I wish I caught the co-main.
I'm so mad I didn't get to see that fight, that, you know, the women's bout, because yeah, like you were saying, people were saying it was one of the greatest fights in UFC history, and I'm like, man, there's a lot of great fights in the history of this organization, so it had to have been.
They guessed, amazing, without going back and analyzing the video to get the actual count, they guessed 500 significant strikes landed.
Wow.
As opposed to the co-main, where they thought 80 strikes were landed between the two guys for the entire duration of the fight.
Oh, no.
I mean, I tend to agree with Izzy. I think Yoel Romero just didn't bring the fight for whatever reason. He was on a 2-fight losing streak. Izzy calls him out. He gets the fight, and you don't even show up. I mean, I know you're 41 or 42 or whatever, but dude, you're probably never going to get another shot.
He looked like he was in fantastic shape too.
According to SportsCenter, Dan Margliotta had to pull him aside and say, "You have to give the judges something to score."
Yeah, he did. He did say that.
Oh, damn!
He did say that.
That, and that's your pay per view main event.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was obviously a tough act to follow. But
I bet Dana White was pissed.
Yeah, I saw the post-fight presser, and he kind of blamed Joel, too. He wasn't really mad, like, livid, but he said, look, we're probably going to set up that Paulo Costa fight, and Paulo Costa's going to bring it. So, I mean, it sucks for Joel, because he's probably never going to get another opportunity, but he didn't show up, so it is what it is.
The benefit was just having the co-main do its part, because let me tell you something. The two punches that Joanna had to take were square on, direct blows, clean fist, middle of the forehead. And then in her post-fight interview, when she was like, my head was kind of going in and out.
Oh, yeah, the swelling and stuff?
No, but she was talking about like her thought. I thought she was referring to her thought process. Like she was sitting there trying to hang into the fight. Oh. And she was like, yeah, and then, you know, my head's kind of going in and out. And I'm like, wow. I mean, that's got concussion written all over it, but she took two monster shots to the dome piece.
Well, I'm kind of pissed I missed it, but
you got to look at that side by side though, if you want. It's bad,
her
dude.
Face,
look at her face unmarked, and then look at it after the fight. Like her head looks swollen.
She looks like the dude from Mask.
He's not a bad call.
Oh my God, she does.
Not a bad call.
She looks like Rocky. What was his name? Wasn't it Rocky?
No, that was it was Jim Carrey that played the Mask, right?
No, talking about you're talking about Elephant Man.
I'm talking about the Mask, like the movie. She looks like the Mask.
No, I'm talking about Mask with
Cher.
Oh no, I don't.
Look up the movie Mask. Just Google Mask Cher and then look at the pictures. And I think it was Rocky Johnson. Or I think that's The Rock's dad's name, I think. But I thought it was about a guy named Rocky. Rocky Dennis. That was his name.
It's a pretty good call.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You'll see when you see the picture, Nick, of Mask.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah. That's what to me it looked like.
Yeah, it looks bad.
Kind of pissed I missed it, though, because I love good fights, man. There's nothing better than watching two fighters.
And Nick's right.
Go to war.
Across the board, people were saying maybe the greatest single fight in the history of the sport. And I don't know that you guys would go that far. You would know better than me. I just know that it was like you were glued to the screen because they just kept throwing blows and kicks. And you know me, I'm not a connoisseur by any stretch of the imagination, but you couldn't turn that off.
Yeah, I imagine those medical suspensions are going to be lengthy if they haven't already been served to them.
Because I mean, I'm talking about, you know, when you say greatest fights of all time, I think of Griffin Bonner.
That was a great fight.
Man, and they had a couple of really great fights, but the first one was probably one of the best.
And people argue that they kind of saved the company.
Yeah.
People made that argument.
Shogun Hu and Dan Henderson had a great fight.
That was a really good fight.
So there's a lot. I mean, Frankie Edgar and Maynard.
I was there. That was a great fight.
Yeah. So there's just a bunch, and it's really hard to figure out which one you think is going to be the absolute best. But
and Shale Sonnen, and I forget the other guy's name, but in the ESPN post-fight.
Ariel Helwani.
He hosted, and there was a third guy, short guy. But I do. He was the guy that said it, too. He's like, after the fight, immediately, both fighters were rushed to the hospital for emergency treatment. He goes, and that's the way it should be in a bout like that. And I'm like, I don't know if that last comment was going to go over real well, but okay. Well,
that's the fight game, man.
Yeah.
If it's going to be one of the greatest fights of all time, somebody's going to the hospital.
Dude, it's worth a watch if you go back.
Really?
Yeah, even after the...
It was a brutal fight. ESPN it was a really good... It's up there. It's going to go up. I think it's going to go down as one of the best. I don't know if I can call it the best, but it's definitely up there because I caught the tail end of it and they were going at it. I mean, it wasn't...
Damn, I'm so mad I missed it now.
Yeah. So people wanted to hear your guys' breakdown, so I'm glad that we got that. So we got that out for the peeps.
Somebody said bury the fights on ESPN Plus. I don't have that.
Nick does.
You still have to buy the yearly. Like what you do is you pay the $50 for the yearly subscription, but then you have to pay another $85 for a yearly subscription to get the pay-per-views. You get what I'm saying? So it's 50 plus 85. So you get
all the pay-per-views for free?
That are on ESPN Plus. See, there's ESPN Plus cards, and then there's ESPN Plus cards that are pay-per-views. Even if you have the ESPN Plus app and you didn't get the pay-per-view subscription, you don't get the pay-per-view. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then some of the paper are all the pay-per-views on ESPN Plus, or are some of them only on like cable or whatever? Oh, that's interesting. Because if I got to pay for the yearly and still pay for the pay-per-views,
I think that's a good deal. You pay $125.
Well, not if there's, you know,
and you get multiple pay-per-views.
The McGregor fight wasn't on ESPN Plus, was it?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. So that's not a good.
I mean, you get the ESPN Plus pay-per-views is what you get. Yeah. So I guess it's, you know.
Well, and their main competition is DAZN?
Not
they don't
really.
Have a, no, their
DAZN
main,
has an app. It's a boxing. It's for boxing though.
Yeah, their main competition is like Bellator.
Okay.
Or not, I guess really there's no competition right now for the UFC. They really don't
have. I'm talking
have,
about just for the money, the app money to get, the trying to get them to maximize the most sports coverage, the pay-per-views.
Oh, it still, there's just nothing that competes with the UFC from an MMA perspective. They're literally the only fight promotion whose pay-per-views do well and people are, you know, clamoring to watch. It's
they're more just, expensive too.
Oh yeah.
So.
Oh, I thought you meant the UFC pay-per-views are more expensive.
No, I'm just talking about strictly the DAZN app.
Uh huh.
It's $100 a year as opposed to $50.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, we got that out of the way. Nick's an ESPN Plus guy. I've considered it recently.
Yeah, you have The Athletic and an ESPN.
Well, I have Sunday Ticket and I have
NBA League Pass. I don't have any of that stuff.
Although your boy is shocked. I saw him tweet out that he goes, I was subscribed to The Athletic. It's okay, but it's not great. It doesn't make me want to re-up, is what he said. Basically.
See, I just don't tweet.
So
I just don't get it. Why would you pay to read somebody else's stuff like that? In the current environment of the internet, I have to pay to read your article. Don't you already? And you probably run ads on those articles. When you pull up an Athletic, there's no ads.
Well, I mean, there's nothing that's interrupting me reading the entire article.
But I'm saying, are there banner ads around the article?
I can check for you.
Yeah. Because now I've got to pay and you run ads. I don't know about that. Make your money off the ads or make your money off me. But now you're just double dipping. And be like, it's like when you, if you pay for Netflix and they started running commercials. I like that. Hulu does it, but that's the free version, and then you have a pay version where you don't get the commercials. I get that. It's like XM Satellite. When they run commercials, I don't listen to those stations anymore. Those stations I listen to, no commercials, because I'm paying for the service. If I listen to ESPN radio, it's free. So no, we run ads.
No ads.
Okay.
Yeah, no ads. Good. Once you're on the site and you go to the articles, no ads.
Good.
All right. So there you have that. Okay. Two in the books, 1 hour to go. 60 minutes left of the show. We come back and get it all going in the final hour next. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.